arms, and two major waves of political terror. Hardly a household, particularly among the city's ethnic minorities and old middle classes, had not been touched by death, prison, or exile, as well as impoverishment. For someone like the poet Olga Bergholz, daughter of a Jewish doctor, it was not unduly melodramatic to state that we measured time by the intervals between one suicide and the next. The siege, though unique in the size of its death toll, was less a tragic interlude than one dark passage among many. The tragedy arose from the combined hubris of Hitler and Stalin. In August 1939, they had astonished the world by putting ideology aside to form a non-aggression pact, under which they divided Poland between them. When Hitler turned on France the following spring, Stalin stood aside, continuing to supply his ally with grain, metals, rubber, and other vital commodities. Though it is clear from what we now know of Stalin's conversations with his Politburo that he expected to be forced into war with Germany sooner or later, the timing of the Nazi attack, codenamed Barbarossa or Redbeard after a crusading Holy Roman Emperor, came as a devastating shock. The new, poorly defended border through Poland was overrun almost immediately, and within weeks, the panic-stricken Red Army found itself defending the major cities of Russia herself. Chief victim of this unpreparedness was Leningrad. Immediately pre-war, the city had a population of just over 3 million. In the 12 weeks to mid-September 1941, when the German and Finnish armies cut it off from the rest of the Soviet Union, about 500,000 Leningraders were drafted or evacuated, leaving just over 2.5 million civilians, at least 400,000 of them children, trapped within the city. Hunger set in almost immediately, and in October, police began to report the appearance of emaciated corpses on the streets. Deaths quadrupled in December, peaking in January and February at 100,000 per month. By the end of what was even by Russian standards a savage winter, on some days, temperatures dropped to minus 30 degrees C or below. Cold and hunger had taken somewhere around 500,000 lives. It is on these months of mass death, what Russian historians call the heroic period of the siege, that this book concentrates. The following two siege winters were less deadly, thanks to there being fewer mouths left to feed, and to food deliveries across Lake Ladoga, the inland sea to Leningrad's east, whose southeastern shores the Red Army continued to hold. In January 1943, fighting also cleared a fragile land corridor out of the city, through which the Soviets were able to build a railway line. Mortality nonetheless remained high, taking the total death toll to somewhere between 700,000 and 800,000. One in every three or four of the immediate pre-siege population by January 1944, when the Wehrmacht finally began its long retreat to Berlin. Remarkably, the siege of Leningrad has been paid rather little attention in the West. The best-known narrative history, written by Harrison Salisbury, a Moscow correspondent for the New York Times, was published in 1969. Military historians have concentrated on the battles for Stalingrad and Moscow, despite the fact that Leningrad was the first city in Europe that Hitler failed to take, and that its fall would have given him the Soviet Union's biggest arms manufactories, shipyards, and steelworks, linked his armies with Finland's, and allowed him to cut the railway lines carrying Allied aid from the Arctic ports of Archangel and Murmansk. More generally, the siege remains lost in the gloomy vastness of the Eastern Front, an empty, snow-swept plain in the public imagination, across which waves of Red Army conscripts stumble, greatcoats flapping, towards massed German machine guns. Worryingly often, during the writing of this book, friends turned out to think that Leningrad, on the Baltic, now called St. Petersburg, and Stalingrad, a third of the size, near the present-day border with Kazakhstan,